Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OhioFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OhioFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Breaking up is hard to do, but when it comes to your wireless carrier, you should have left a while ago. You're over the big three carriers. You deserve better. Xfinity Mobile. Now you can get unlimited with 5G included for just $30 a month on the nation's fastest, most reliable network. So break free from the big three and save with Xfinity Mobile.
Take the savings challenge at xfinitymobile.com/mysavings to see how much you can save when you get Xfinity Mobile and internet together. Reduced speeds at 20 gigabytes per line. Most reliable based on Root Metrics U.S. report. Results vary, not an endorsement.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
All right, it's Film Study with Tim McCusick. We're going to look back at week 9. As the Ravens lost to the Steelers 23-16. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh, but this was a tough one to take.
And a really tough one going into the bye week. I mean, 3 losses in a row going into a bye week is going to be tough.
It is. I mean, the Ravens need to get healthy, so the bye week's here at a good time for them from that perspective, although a week earlier might have been better. But they need to get over some injuries, and if there is any hope to salvage the season with any sort of a playoff run, which is going to be very difficult, it needs to start with a win against Cincinnati when they come back.
All right, so we made it through Monday, so that means Harbaugh is okay for the bye week, correct? I mean, I know it's going to be tough with a lot of blame going on him and Flacco this week.
Yeah, it's a tremendous amount of blame going around, and a lot of reactionary viewpoints. I mean, this is a time for pronouncements. There's a lot of pronouncements out there. If you're on Twitter, you got a front row seat for all of it when you get your tweet deck up. It's hard, for people to accept what's going on, and they want to basically burn down the whole thing and start over. The people who are saying anything. It's also kind of like saying, "Is life fair?" And asking that to a group of people. The people who don't think life's fair will let you know in a very loud voice that it
right,
is not.
Of course.
And that's who, you're hearing on Twitter. So I know there's a lot of frustration out there. I don't think that any move is imminent, given that the Ravens' playoff hopes are not completely dashed at this point. They're not in good shape.
They're close, but
not completely dashed. I would not give up on the season just yet. And you know, this was an important win against the Steelers to have. They didn't get it. It puts them in a very bad position in terms of divisional record, AFC record, a whole lot of tiebreakers with important teams. Like getting the tiebreaker against the Bengals is not going to be difficult. Getting a tiebreaker against the Chargers is going to be more difficult than it was before. So you know, those would be teams that they'd be in that hunt for that last playoff spot with.
Right, and splitting the season with the Steelers is no big deal. We've done that many times. It's the fact that it's the third loss in a row, and the fact that this defense we were really high on early in the season, and now it's not even that they've come back down to earth. It's that they've gone from giving up no points in the second half to now just kind of not being able to stop the ball.
Yeah, that's been very frustrating, obviously, to see the team not be able to get off the field like they did, like against the Steelers, very much like against the Panthers. They've put together now 9 straight quarters of pretty darn awful defensive football. You know, it's certainly not what the Ravens fans want, giving up, what is it, about 81 points during that time. Let's see, right. 38 against the Panthers, 23, be 61. I think it was 17 to the Saints, so maybe it's 78 points, but a lot of points for the last 9 quarters.
Right, and I want to get to that getting off the field struggles. But first, I want to talk Terrell Suggs. So we talked 2 weeks ago about how the TV cameras kept making a big deal and the announcers making a big deal about, look, there's this old guy and he's keeping his own out there on the field with all these young guys. Then this week, Suggs seemed to make some pressure early in the game, and then by the end of the game, he was on the sideline and the camera kept going to him on the sideline.
Well, it seems to be a big deal for whoever is covering the game when Terrell Suggs is on the sideline. So they're not apparently keeping track of how often he's playing when he's in the game. I'm going to get that stat for you just in a minute. But there was an interesting quote which came out of John Harbaugh today that said, there's nothing wrong physically with Terrell Suggs. And the question was asked, I think, in response to the fact that Suggs was not available for comment in the locker room after the game. And that's a little unusual. He's usually one of the vocal people, one of the leaders who will talk about things. And for him not to be available is just a little bit unusual and suspect. So the question was some move made to reduce his playing time? And he had 45 snaps in this game, which is still 60% roughly of the total snaps in the game. Not a bad total as far as I would think it is. He played a little less in the fourth quarter than he had played up till that point. So I guess you could point to that, but also, you know, he didn't have a great game. He had one quarterback hit. He had one pressure. The quarterback hit that he got was after an ample time and space opportunity had already occurred. So it was a late QH. The Ravens had 3 of those in the game, by the way, which is part of their pass rush issues. But I'm afraid that maybe Terrell has gotten word that he's going to get a little bit less playing time and that other players like Za'Darius Smith, like Tim Williams, like Bowser are going to see more snaps.
Yeah, and that's kind of the picture I got today, because that's kind of what he said with the whole nothing wrong with him. He said that Suggs played as much as the Ravens wanted him to play. So that comment kind of stood out as, okay, you wanted the younger guys out there.
Right. Well, I mean, this is an interesting game because they were without Tim Williams. He had an ankle injury for the game, so he didn't even dress, and hopefully he'll be back. But, you know, they were very shorthanded at outside linebacker. Za'Darius Smith was overused to a terrific extent in this game. He played 80% of the snaps, 79% actually. It was used both inside and outside. So when you use a guy on the inside, you can't use him for 80% of the snaps. And since Za'Darius has this dual role of outside linebacker and inside pass rusher on passing downs, he can't approach 80% of the snaps. He should probably be playing more like 50 to 60% of the snaps. So the Ravens are suffering, and we'll get to that a little later, in terms of some injuries really thinning their available pass rushers, and that's going to, well, unfortunately, we're going to see some more, I think, of the fourth quarter pass rush not being as good as it could otherwise be if they were healthy.
All right, let's get into getting off the field, because the defense could not get off the field yesterday.
Yeah.
A lot of third down conversions.
Yeah, so they went 11 of 17 on third down. The Steelers get third and fourth down combined. And yeah, I've got the plays listed out there on the website with time references, so I'd encourage you to go out there if you're really interested in looking at the film and whatnot. If you just want to hear a synopsis of it, we'll do it here. One thing that really stood out in this game was how often the Steelers were able to run pick and rub routes against the Ravens. It's always kind of been a staple of the way Pittsburgh operates their offense, but more than any time I've ever seen, they ran these pick routes, they ran these rub routes to get people open and often off motion. So Connor's touchdown, for example, if you want to look at that play, he motions to the right side and Kenny Young tries to follow him from the other side of the field. And he's hustling after him, but the ball snapped and Vance McDonald got between him and the spot he was supposed to cover, and he didn't know how to go around him. And McDonald was smart about him. He didn't like lay his body into him, which would have been an offensive pass interference foul. He kind of just shouldered him as he was moving by in the same direction, and that slowed him down tremendously. Connor was wide open for the catch, but even when he caught the ball at the 10-yard line, because the field's compressed, you would figure the Ravens would be able to collapse and get him short of the goal line. Well, not so. They had five guys all running towards him, but they couldn't get to him before he reached the pylon. So, you know, that was just one example of the pick and rub routes. Most of the rest of the game, I'd say Juju Smith-Schuster was the most significant in terms of creating pick and rub opportunities for other receivers. Now, Smith-Schuster is their leading receiver in terms of catches and in terms of yards. It's not Brown anymore. Brown has the most touchdowns, but Smith-Schuster not only caught big balls to convert third downs, he also created the pick and rub opportunities to get Switzer free and, you know, to get Brown free that led to other first downs as well. So he's got a much bigger role in this offense as a big receiver who can get in the way than I had previously realized.
All right. Is that the only problem? I mean, what else is going on? The Steelers, just nothing worked.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, there's more going on. One of the things we haven't talked about yet is the kind of some of the pass rush elements. But the Ravens ran 15 blitzes in this game. Okay, and that's 15 blitzes from off the line of scrimmage. And for new listeners, we're not talking about 5-plus man pass rushes, which a lot of other sources would define as a blitz. Mine is a blitz from off the line of scrimmage. So you could have more than one on one play, but each one is counted individually. So anyway, they had 15 such individual off the line of scrimmage blitzes in the game, but the last one of them occurred only on the third play of the second half. And what happened on that play? Tavon Young blitzed off the slot. The slot receiver he was opposite was Switzer. Switzer then became the hot read. Roethlisberger hit him immediately for a first down conversion, 9 yards, whatever it was. But anyway, the point being that Roethlisberger read the hot read, and the Ravens should have at that point realized that, and I guess they did, that they weren't getting it done with blitzes, and they had to try other methods of deception. Now, it was interesting because on that play, the call was for the nose tackle, Michael Pierce, to drop into coverage, and he was actually in the zone where Switzer moved through to make his catch. So there was another Raven closer when the catch was made, but part of that is because Michael Pierce doesn't have the agility to get into good position in the coverage in the secondary. It was a case where I did not agree with the idea of dropping Pierce. I think even though he can't contribute maybe as much, you keep him at the line of scrimmage, try and let him get his hands up, because a hot read like that is going to mean a ball is probably going to be out quickly, and their alignment can help you a lot. He can try and deflect that ball and stop the completion that way. But anyway, dropping him to coverage, I didn't think added much.
Gotcha. Now we got a lot of pass rush on Tennessee, and we all knew it was too much, and it wasn't the norm. But to go from that to like nothing now, is it injuries? Is it the strength of the team? What do you think?
Well, I mean, let's start by framing this up a little bit, because they had 9 quarterback hits against Tennessee, but they turned that into 11 sacks. And normally, most sacks are quarterback hits. But they had a couple where they knocked the ball free of Mariota's hand once, and they drove him out of bounds. Those don't count as quarterback hits, but they are sacks nonetheless. So they converted effectively 100% of their quarterback hits for sacks in that game. Since then, they've had 13 quarterback hits and only two sacks. And they're having a bunch of problems now with their quarterback hits and their pressures coming late. And in fact, that I made the point that three of their quarterback hits came late, including their one sack against the Steelers. So if you remember that last play where the Steelers' last offensive play, when they got their sack.
Right. When Ben just ran back to buy time.
Ran back, bought time, and it was a fair amount of time ran off the clock before that sack even occurred. Right. So anyway, it was not an ideal situation. Otherwise, looking at what's wrong with the pass rush, we could go through a laundry list of items. So let's try and do a little bit of that here, since I know people do want to know. I honestly have a feeling that the injuries to Willie Henry and Tim Williams are already kind of taking their toll, because they are limiting the pool of situational pass rushers the Ravens have available. So what do I mean by that? So Willie Henry is a guy that the Ravens can count on to be fresh, to be brought on third down. Without him, they're relying more on Brent Urban. Well, Brent Urban is a pretty darn good pass rusher, or can contribute something to the pass rush from the inside. Let's put it that way. But since he's also a good run defender, the Ravens want him on the early downs, and Brent Urban is stretched to play those pass rush downs as well. And, Urban had been playing 75% or so of the snaps earlier in the season. In this game, he played a fairly reasonable 39 snaps, so he wasn't tremendously overworked in this game, but it's still a case where probably would do better with Henry in 25 snaps, so just pass rushing would be a more ideal situation. So that's hurting them. Tim Williams is hurting them for a different reason. Because they are a man short at outside linebacker, that means that Darius Smith is forced into this dual role for Moore. So he's having to play more stand-up outside linebacker in addition to his specialized role as an inside pass rusher. And as I mentioned earlier, it's really just too many snaps for him. They're going to need to find out how to reduce his snap count going forward.
All right. Ample time and space. We normally talk about this with Joe Flacco, but it's got to be a high number for Ben Roethlisberger yesterday.
Yeah, so Roethlisberger had 25 out of 49 ample time and space opportunities, but that doesn't really tell the whole story, because he also had 12 times where the ball was out quickly, meaning there was no pressure event that was generated by the defense by the time the ball was released. But in my judgment, I couldn't be sure that the pocket was going to hold up for 3 seconds. I have to make a judgment at that point,
right,
when the ball is out in less than 3 seconds, to see if it would have held up for three. And it can be, it's usually fairly obvious. Everybody's blocked up cleanly. I call it for an ample time and space, but there were 12 of these where I didn't necessarily think that was the case, but the ball was out so quickly that there was nothing the Ravens could really do about it defensively. And some of the pressure events they did get, of course, were late ones. And as I mentioned, the three quarterback hits in particular, coming after an ample time and space opportunities, are far less valuable.
All right. How about once the ball was passed, tracking down the receiver? Did the Ravens do a decent job with that?
I think that the secondary was reasonable at maintaining coverage. And if you look at the yards per play, it was 5.8 yards per play, your pass play, the Ravens allowed. That's certainly a number you can win with against Ben Roethlisberger, or against a lot of quarterbacks for that matter. I mean, the average in the league is certainly higher than that. He didn't have any turnovers. That's gonna hurt your chances to get off the field. It's gonna hurt your chances to keep them from scoring points, even with a relatively low yard per pass number. But nonetheless, that you can work with that. The only guy who made a bad mistake was obviously Carr on the outside versus Jesse James, who gave up the 51-yard play. Weddle somehow was caught out of position, and I'm not sure exactly how, on the 22-yard throw that converted second and 20 for Joshua Dobbs. Now, for those who don't know, and I think they did mention it on air, Joshua Dobbs, that was his first career pass.
Right. They mentioned it, as he was running out there. under pressure, yeah, of course.
He turned around. It was a play action handoff. Had all the time in the world to set up, and then he threw the ball, right over the middle of the field for a completion. where Weddle had his back turned to the play. And I have not seen the All-22 yet to see just how that happened. You see there's a reverse angle available in the broadcast where you can kind of see that Weddle has his back turned, but you right. can't figure out exactly what happened. And it was a bad situation because it looked like Weddle would have probably been in position for a pick if he had been facing Dobbs on the play. So we'll have to see what that was. But I honestly haven't had a chance to see the All-22 yet, so it'll come out tonight, and I want to take a look at it then.
Yeah, that was that seemed to be the death of this team. Once that happened, it was kind of tough to have any hope for the rest of the game.
That was a big one. Certainly, it was that 22-yard pass. Then they had another play in between, and then they had the 51-yard pass to Jesse James, which right. put him in range right away to get the field goal to put him back up 10. So, obviously not a good series of events there for the Ravens.
Right. So Weddle missed out on that interception, and that's kind of the story of this defense. Is pass defense, they're doing well, but they're not getting the ball.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Josh. Because I mean, they are fourth in the entire NFL, tied for fourth with 48 passes defensed here through nine games. That, unfortunately, they have only five interceptions, which is 9.6 passes defensed per interception, and that ratio is fifth worst in the entire NFL. So if you look at the Ravens, I mean, and who they are as a team and their DNA and their history and everything, they're a team that has lived off turnovers, particularly interceptions. In recent years, that's been a lot of the fuel for the defense. They've led the NFL interceptions the last two seasons. And you'd really hope that they'd be able to convert more of those than even a league average team does. You know, so if the league average is one every 5.2, maybe the Ravens should be at one every 4.5 or even a little better. And then that would have given the Ravens more than 10 interceptions this year. And, you know, we'd be probably in a different spot on the season. You know, at 1 point loss to the Saints, you might reverse that one. This game, maybe you reverse it or you get closer. Maybe the Browns game is a different outcome. But they just have not, you know, changed interceptions. I have not converted the PDs into interceptions this year. And that's been very frustrating.
Yeah. So every 9.6, which still seems higher than what it's been for the past 3 weeks. I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head the last interception that the Ravens got.
Yeah, I don't think they've had one the last 3 weeks. So I think right there you've probably got your answer.
Right. So that 9.6 is way off.
It's infinite in the last 3 weeks. It's something to zero.
Right.
So.
Of course. All right. So what changes going forward? We get healthy, I assume.
Yeah, I don't really know where the Ravens are health wise. I mean, they had a positive comment about Tavon Young today, that his injury is nothing serious. Now, unfortunately, I've heard that before, so I don't know whether to believe it or not. It's a huge injury for this season. It's a huge injury for the future for Tavon Young if he gets hurt in year three and it imperils in any way his 2019 season, because he'll be playing for a contract in 2019, and the Ravens would probably really like to lock him up as a cornerstone player, maybe after year three here, if he was healthy anyway, if they were secure about what was going on with him physically. So hopefully he comes back and there is really nothing serious and is able to play. They have some players still on IR designated to return who can come back. And Kennedy was apparently mentioned specifically by Harbaugh today as being somebody who could come back in the secondary. There was an interesting comment made that Kenneth Dixon apparently has other reasons why he is not able to return or has not been cleared to return by the league. So we don't know what those are.
Gotcha.
We can suspect based on what his past history is that there might be, you know, it might be something related to PEDs or might be something related to other problems, but we don't know yet what the problem is.
All right.
But your other questions, about who's going to return from injury. And Ronnie Stanley is still out. The Ravens need him back more than any other player on the entire roster in order of him being healthy. Any sort of run that they would make, I think, hinges on Stanley not being seriously hurt for the rest of the year. So.
Right. We've got Stanley and Hurst that have missed a bunch of time on that offensive line.
Mm-hmm. And Hurst would be a bad but perhaps serviceable replacement at left tackle. They also could use Hurst at left guard if they wanted to switch things up there. So they have, you know, they have needs for both of those guys, certainly, in order to them coming back. I think Orlando Brown, regardless of the other changes made, will stay at right tackle at this point.
All right. Well, we'll get to that on Wednesday's episode, sure, when we talk about the offense, because we do need to talk about Orlando Brown and how he's been playing. All right, so we got all these young guys that should be getting more playing time. The bye week is also notorious when you're a struggling team for coaching changes. You see anything with that coming up?
You know, I think the Ravens have been a very stable organization for their entire history because they haven't made a lot of in-season coaching changes. There have been coordinator changes made at midseason. Cam Cameron got the axe during the year, most notably when the Ravens were having a good year in 2006. That was Jim Fassel. Cam Cameron got it in 2012 and still got a Super Bowl ring. So it does happen during the season. I think it's possible we could see a change made. I don't think that we're really there yet. I think Wink is really just starting out. And although we've seen some cracks in the armor the last couple of weeks in terms of some things he's called, in particular, I didn't like that slot blitz with the nose tackle dropping against Roethlisberger. But I think there's a lot of good to go there, too. I think he's a player's coach, which makes it easier for him to hold together the locker room. And as playing time has to change in order to get a better sense of who these younger players are and try and figure out what the draft needs are for the coming years, also, you know, who the Ravens really have a chance to release. I mean, it might be worth getting Chuck Clark some time as a deep safety to figure out what your future is with Weddle and perhaps even Jefferson as well. So Weddle is a big cap savings next year, and I think, you know, he's the kind of player who drives you to make changes in the secondary. You've got Mosley on the team, at least for now, and he can certainly take the green dot helmet back if you want to put Chuck Clark back at free safety for part of this time.
All right. Let's get to the mailbag. Again, it's getting your questions on Twitter with the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag. First one up is, Ken, why did the Ravens not take a timeout before the two-minute warning? I don't know how things were in the stands, but I know at home where I was watching the game, there were a lot of people yelling for the Ravens to call timeouts during the Steeler drive when they were just running time off the clock.
Right. I understand. There is value to calling a timeout there. Of course, saving those timeouts would have had a lot of value if the Ravens had been able to stop the drive right there. Having three timeouts and driving the field with 2 minutes is a lot easier than driving the field with no timeouts in that situation. Yes, they could have done it. I don't really blame them for that as a game management decision. I got to say, if you look at the various possible things that ways could have gone, that's not a big negative game management decision to me. To me, one of the things that was getting the Ravens all through the fourth quarter was a lack of alacrity getting to the football, which they can only blame on themselves. Offensively, they had the ball, but they were not moving to the football quickly. And, you know, there's like 8 minutes left and they're down 10 or whatever the point of the game was. And I'm saying, you know, this has got to be your last huddle. You guys need to get to the line of scrimmage, right, and get going. And they didn't do it, and it gives the Steelers time to get set and get prepared. The other thing that was giving the Steelers time to get set and get prepared and get defensive substitutions made was when the Ravens would bring in a new package. So the Ravens, a very exciting offense this year in terms of bringing three and four guys onto the field at a time, oftentimes when Lamar Jackson comes in as well. And that creates a very different look that the opposing team then has a chance to react to. It's pretty clear in the coaching and officials meeting before the game, where each team kind of shows their secrets to the officials so they won't be surprised by them, that I would guess Tomlin asked the officials, please give us time to substitute defensively when they're put in their new packages. And that basically meant that whenever the Ravens did that, they wasted about 8 or 10 seconds of clock time with the umpire standing over the ball, making sure the ball didn't get snapped. And I'm just screaming at the field, yelling for them to allow the Ravens to run their offense and not be stalled by this. If that were Manning or Brady or Belichick on the other sideline, I don't think they've been held up in the same way. And we saw, unfortunately, firsthand that happened during the 2014 playoff game when Belichick was playing all kinds of games with the eligible receiver and right. the Ravens weren't given time to substitute. So utter garbage, and I really dislike the way that's handled in different ways for different teams.
All right, and we're going to get to those packages on Wednesday because we'll have to talk about Lamar on Wednesday with John Harbaugh also coming out yesterday or today and saying we'd like to use Lamar more.
Yeah, so obviously he pointed at the Saints game and their use of Taysom Hill, and he had 24 snaps or whatever. He's a little bit more right. he does a little bit more
he also went out as a wide receiver
back. There you go.
Oh, you know what, never mind. We saw Lamar go out as wide receiver yesterday, and we'll talk about that on Wednesday as well.
We'll talk about it on Wednesday. Let's keep going with the mailbag here.
The mailbag: how can we close the hole in the middle of the defense? It seems that every team can find room behind our linebackers and in front of our safeties. Is it Weddle's limited range, or does the linebackers not get into their zone fast enough? Do we seem slow? So this is that third and medium passes that they keep getting.
Okay, well, first of all, those are very difficult to defend, and the Steelers are extremely well schemed up in terms of their ability to convert third and medium and short. They use all these pick and rub routes. They do a lot of slants. Just very difficult to defend. The way to defend it is with tall men at the line of scrimmage who can deflect that pass. That's your best bet to do it. Otherwise, these bigger receivers tend to body up on your slot corner, and they're just too big to get through. Tight ends, same kind of problems. Any kind of crossing routes that go from both directions, you better get a very quick pass rush that's in the face of Roethlisberger, or there's not going to be much ability to stop that either. So it is very difficult to defend. Now, I want to get back to what he really said about level two to level three. So there are a couple tonics for this. One is have a great playmaking safety on the back end. So when the Ravens had Ed Reed, it didn't really matter if the Ravens' coverage behind the linebackers was perfect or not, because Ed Reed was in the middle of the field. Tom Brady wore it on his armband, said "Fine 20 on every play," was what he had when he played the Ravens.
All right, but that's Ed Reed. We're not going to have another Ed Reed in our defense, maybe not in my lifetime.
Well, we won't have exactly Ed Reed, but we could have a great playmaking safety who has more speed and more ability to make interceptions and make the quarterback pay for overthrows in the middle of the field, because that's what you really want to do as part of keeping people from trying to target your linebackers there.
Okay. Gotcha. Minion Hunter gets in with, did other teams take the Saints' plan to run long drives versus our defense and tire them out and copy it? Because that's what it looks like.
Every team would love to do that against the Ravens if they could. The Steelers were particularly well suited to get into third and medium short situations and convert those for many of the reasons we've talked about, the rub and pick routes and there are other scheme advantages on that down. So it was a very viable strategy for them. I think it's also a viable strategy for the Saints, who also were willing to go for it on fourth down a fair amount when they came up short. Those two teams are extremely well suited to do it. Why the Panthers were able to do it so effectively is another matter entirely.
Right.
And the other teams this year, generally speaking, had not had good success on third down. The Ravens now have dropped to the fifth best on third down in the league, with about 35% conversions allowed. So they're not at the lofty heights they were earlier in the season.
But those are still probably inflated numbers based on the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, the last 3 weeks, they're definitely worse than that.
Yeah.
Definitely worse, yeah.
Yep. All right, probably not this season, Ken, but could move into a 4-3 instead of a 3-4 help us in this middle of the field?
Yeah, that's a great question. We hear it from time to time. People seem to love the 4-3 versus the 3-4. There are some things you get out of the 4-3 defense that help you with having two enormous defensive players on the field a lot on early downs, that help you in the run game, help keep men off your middle linebacker from blocking your middle linebacker and get some freedom there. A lot of the advantages of the 4-3 I don't really think comes from the passing game itself. I think we already play a four-man front defensively on every passing down, meaning every down where it's an obvious passing down. So once you're in that position already, you're already running what effectively is something similar to a 4-3. You have different personnel, admittedly, but you're that four-man front with a dime I like better than you know, 4-3 personnel where you would keep one of your linebackers on the field as well anyway. So I personally like the 3-4 better. There's another bigger organizational reason why I think the 3-4 is better, is that edge rushers who can stand up and also play the run, which are the 4-3 guys, are much harder to find. And so to retain them, you're going to pay more, and then you're going to have guys who are alternates for that, or you have to have a plan to move to the 3-4 in season. And that's just not an easy thing to do. It's much easier to find 3-4 outside linebackers and have three big guys on the inside. It's just an easier scheme to run for dollar and cap purposes.
All right. Now let's get negative and let's look at this bye week. And Sean gets in with, I don't see us making the playoffs, so why wait until the end of the season to fire everyone?
Well, I mean, some of it is stability and wanting to keep a good scheme in place. I mean, let's start with Wink Martindale, for example. If you want to find out what these young defensive players can do, you may as well have them play under the scheme they've already learned so far and work with that for the rest of the season. It's not like it's a bad scheme. It's done fairly well this season overall. They're still the second lowest scoring defense in the entire NFL, after all. But, you know, it's a case where they may want to give different players a chance to play as the season rolls out, particularly if they're considering what cap casualties they'll have next year. Now, for the record here, I'm not there yet. I still want the Ravens to give it a try, you know, try and win these next two games, certainly at home, and hopefully get themselves back into the playoff hunt, even if it's only a fringe chance. But I do realize that at some point, and maybe it's one more loss to Cincinnati, or maybe it's two more losses at some other point during the season, their chance is going to be greatly reduced. Right. And when that happens, particularly when they get the eighth loss, I don't think there's any reason at that point to not try out a lot of the young players on both sides of the ball to make plans for 2019.
Yeah, and that brings up this follow-up question of what should the Ravens prioritize moving forward? Who in this defense would you build around in a rebuild?
Well, there is actually quite a lot to build around in terms of the young players. I mean, there's a fair amount of young talent. Now, the problem is a lot of it is not young superstar talent. The one guy that I think they have to decide if he's a cornerstone player or not right now is Za'Darius Smith. And other than that, they obviously need to figure out what's the appropriate number they want to pay Mosley and decide if they have another option that's better in terms of the draft. In terms of going after that new, probably who will be their signal caller playing at that Mike linebacker position, and decide on that. They have, you know, Eric Weddle to decide on. They have 1 year of Weddle. It's not all that expensive for his fourth season. He might be worth it. He might not. If he's not worth it, if you're moving on anyway, yeah, then draft a free safety and figure out if he's the guy, or maybe try and figure out if Elliott is the guy, which unfortunately they can't do this season. Chuck Clark could be the guy, and then you can give him snaps the rest of this year. One of the things you have to be willing to do if you wanted to see if you got Weddle's replacement on the roster is give the green dot to somebody else, though. So he's wearing it now, and it would have to go back to Mosley if you're trying to judge if other players are ready
right,
to go.
Right, just so that you could get Weddle off the field. Gotcha.
There you go.
All right, Ken, well, that takes care of our defense. Hopefully we don't have to talk about a game like this again on the defensive side of the ball.
Minion Otter, who asked, what's going on with Bam Bradley? And unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that anyway. I don't know where he is in terms of his rehab. Harbaugh did mention that there were some players that they could get going, and there are players who could come back after the bye. But Bradley was a PUP player, which means there's a limited window in which he can start practicing. So we'll know very soon if Bam Bradley's season is over or not. I think he has to start practicing, I believe, by week 9. Might be week 10. But anyway, if he's not practicing after this week, it's very close to the season being over for him.
Right, and there's been no talk at all about him, so we're probably leaning that way.
Probably.
All right, Ken, this is a bye week, which means we've got no game to preview on Sunday and get excited for. So why don't you fill in the listener on how our schedule is going to be upcoming?
Okay, so we'll plan to do the offensive review this week. Might do it tomorrow night, but the podcast will be available either Wednesday or Thursday morning to you, or Tuesday or Wednesday night if you're in a hurry to get it. And then that'll be it for podcasts this week. Next week, we're going to do two roster breakdown podcasts, one for the offense, one for the defense. And we'll get into a lot of the questions I think we've just been talking about how do the Ravens look at their roster entering 2019? What do they have in terms of young talent, in terms of talent that is at a different point? Who are still some decent lottery ticket players they have to build their roster around or to have on the roster even next year. So it'd be some interesting things to talk about then. We're going to have some guests on, we think, next week to discuss that with us, some of the local podcasters and writers we're planning to invite. So hopefully we'll have some good back and forth dialogue on that. It's certainly a very interesting topic for the rest of the season. Right. And that's what we got planned so far. Go out to Russell Street, read the report, follow me at Film Study Ravens online on Twitter, and love to hear from you during the day. I try and answer all the questions I can then.
Yep. And make sure you go to Russell Street Report for those breakdowns of times. We kind of went quickly through some of the plays, and that'll break it down a whole lot more.
How about Birdland Sports?
Hey, you got it right. Birdland Sports is about to get a new website any day now that's going to make everything easier to find, including this podcast. So keep on going on over to birdlandsports.com. Soon we'll have a nice fancy new page for Film Study where you'll even be able to put in your mailbag questions right there.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that was coming. That's a good idea.
Yeah, so that'll be right on the side. Hopefully by the end of this week, maybe as early as tomorrow. So keep checking out Birdland Sports. Lots of great podcasts up there. Brand new Section 336 out now to go along with this episode. So check that out.
Yep.
All right, Ken.
All right, Josh.
Well, we'll talk soon.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture. And when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space. Just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.